The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, FA Cup and Premier League with more tight ties and battles for breathing space than that Everton Post protester. FA Cup, Liverpool's Forest thump, while it's Vieira who keeps his long run going. League, Spurs putting the whammers on the hammers, while Arsenal praise the party but get in trouble for celebrating at the Villa, like the Tories in lockdown. All that plus quarterfinal action in the Intertotally. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Monday, 21st of March, and good morning, stroke hello to you, listener. Thank you so much for joining us on the Totally. We have with us today Daniel Storey. No regrets, Daniel?
No regrets.
All right. Beaming, meanwhile, back from Crystal Palace, it's Dom Fifield.
Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks. These are the days you'll look back on, Dom.
That's exactly what I said to my 13-year-old son yesterday.
What did he reply?
He just looked at me blankly and played Xbox on his phone.
Brilliant. Kids say. Oh, Adrian Clark's with us as well. Adrian, on the run from the celebration police.
I do hope that Dom didn't celebrate too hard. I hope he didn't celebrate like they won the cup yesterday. I just want to make sure he got the right perspective in terms of his celebration.
Yeah. Adrian's on a charge of enjoying Arsenal's win at Villa. Mate, it was Villa.
If you can't enjoy winning a football match, let's just give up. If we can't enjoy being on this pod and celebrate being involved in this wonderful establishment. What's the point?
What indeed? Well, that's a big question. Not sure if it's one we can answer in the course of today's show, but what we can talk about is a weekend split down the middle. Four games in the Premier League. Four, they call them quarterfinals, in the FA Cup. Saturday lunchtime in the Cup, Chelsea beat Borough 2-0. On Sunday, Palace handed Everton their biggest cup defeat since January 1955, 4-0 at Selhurst Park. Southampton lost 4-1 to Man City, and Nottingham Forest Cup run came to an end at the hands of Liverpool, who were 1-0 winners at the City Ground. The draw then sees, it's all Premier League. You've got the top three plus Palace in the semi-finals. Palace take on Chelsea in the Dom Fifield derby. We'll be hearing a lot about that, Dom.
I can hardly wait.
Yeah. And Man City get Liverpool 1 week after facing them in the league. Crikey. All right, well, let's do the quarterfinals then. Let's begin with events at the City Ground. Daniel, you were there and the Forest fans were in good voice.
Yeah, they were. It was a cracking atmosphere. It really was. There's a kind of weird pre-match feeling amongst Forest supporters that we absolutely mustn't act like underdogs because, you know, we are still a big club, remember, and we will have days like this again, and therefore we shouldn't act like we're a League Two team visiting a Premier League team in the Cup. And yet, the players come onto the pitch and Liverpool have made seven changes and they are still categorically better player for player. And great atmosphere. I said I'd have no regrets. I didn't have any regrets in the kind of cold light of Monday morning, but they did create chances. And I think Liverpool were by far the better team in the first half and probably deserved to be ahead at the break. Firmino missed that one-on-one. But after that, Forest didn't play with any fear. They have this pattern under Steve Cooper where they try and start quickly, get through to about 50 minutes and just kind of hold it at a draw and then have 30 or 40 minutes where they just go at teams and try and score the majority of their goals. And that's pretty much what they tried to do. And they did most of that other than scoring the goal.
Which do you most not have regrets about? Is it Philip Zinchenko's miss or Ryan Yates not dragging his leg a bit better? Because that was there. It was there for him.
Yeah, I don't think it was a penalty. I think he initiated the contact. I think if Alisson had moved his glove up, maybe, but I don't think it was a penalty. The Zinchenko miss is the one. Forest have actually missed pretty much that exact same chance in two of their last three games. And in both of those, from one of them, they scored the rebound against QPR, and the other, they scored about a minute later to kill the game off anyway. So they do have a habit of that at the moment. It's been different players each time. But yeah, just the fact that, you know, basically a minute and a half later, Jota kind of just stays onside, I think it's fair to say, and scores. And that felt so kind of categorical for the game, because that's what we're always worried about. If you don't take chances against better teams, they will score one eventually.
That's what Liverpool do. That's what they did to Arsenal just a few days before, eh, Adrian?
Yeah, they're very efficient, very ruthless. They're an outstanding team, even their reserves. I know they were depleted here, Liverpool, but if the majority of Premier League sides had put up a performance like that against them, I think they would have been quite satisfied. Genuinely, I think Steve Cooper has turned what I thought was one of the most boring, lifeless Championship teams into one that looks ready to compete with Premier League teams. It's brilliant what he's done. And no wonder there's a great atmosphere. No wonder Mull of Kintyre was belted out before kickoff and at halftime as well. There is something brewing at the City Ground, and the manager has had a transformational effect. And I think Daniel had the right term there in terms of fearless. They don't fear anybody now. It's about them and what they do, and they make life really hard for whoever they come across. Ask Arsenal, ask Leicester. And Jurgen Klopp was effusive in his praise as well, wasn't he? So, yeah, Forest may have lost this, but I think good times are round the corner.
Well, Daniel says days like this again. But when, Daniel, do you think will Liverpool be visiting the City Ground next season in the league? And if not, which people are you most worried about not being there for you next time around?
Well, that's the kind of the fear that lies within every Forest supporter, in that we didn't expect to get promoted this season. We had one point from the first seven games, and everyone kind of thought that even staying up would be the aim. That's clearly all now shifted. And in terms of games played or points per games won, Forest are, I think, fourth in the league now. They are still eighth or ninth because other teams have played more, and that hectic schedule between now and May will test them. But they now expect to get into the playoffs. Forest have never even won a playoff semi-final, and we found fairly intricate ways of avoiding doing so. So that's one ghost. And the other ghost is as you mentioned, in the summer, because I think Brennan Johnson may well leave. Lewis Grabban is, his contract's running down. Jed Spence is on loan. James Garner's on loan. Zinchenko's on loan. So there's an easy way that squad gets broken up. The flip side to that, and to end hopefully on a positive, is that with Cooper there, his record with young players, with the England under-17s and at Liverpool and at Swansea, suggests that now I think Forest are probably a natural home for those Premier League loan players, which for a long time they were basically the opposite.
Mm. Klopp loved his visit. I think most people watching this game who hadn't spent a lot of time watching Forest came away thinking it would be great to see this club back in the Premier League.
It's a weird thing, that, because I think probably the fans of any football fan who's probably 35 plus, if you ask them to name a kind of your ideal 20 Premier League teams, I think Forest probably are in there for most people. And for Forest fans, that's obviously a compliment, but it's also, it kind of weighs around our neck, because we haven't been there since 1999, which is, there's a heck of a lot of teams have played in the Premier League since Forest have, and we've obviously played in League One more recently than the Premier League. So the compliments are nice, the praise is nice, but we have to make good on that. Otherwise, it feels a bit accidentally patronising.
Right. You're one of only seven Football League clubs, is that right, to never make it to the new Wembley as well? Although that could change. That could change. All right, Liverpool are heading to Wembley. Quadruple is still on for Liverpool, having notched up their seventh away victory in a row in all competitions. And they're going to be facing Man City. As I mentioned, extraordinary run of fixtures. They've got City in the league, then the second leg of their Champions League draw against Benfica. City, meanwhile, will be playing Atletico Madrid, and then they go again in the Cup. Extraordinary. Man City, meanwhile, who are flexing their muscles down at St Mary's on Sunday afternoon, enjoying a polite 2-1 lead, and then brought on Mahrez and Phil Foden. Oh, my word, what a hit from Phil Foden.
Brilliant. And I mean, City continue to have this ability to, when your team is playing against them, and I'm saying this as a fan as opposed to a player, but you feel as if they must have 13 players on the pitch at any one time. There was a period in the game they played at Selhurst the previous week, it was goalless draw, creditable point for Palace, fantastic point for Palace. But at one point, about six City players: Mahrez, Foden, Grealish, Bernardo Silva, all sort of touched the ball in an intricate move. And I'm thinking, bloody hell, I didn't realise all these guys were playing. They can't all be on the pitch at one time. This is absolutely unfair. This is seriously not, shouldn't happen. And I think that, I mean, they were probably due a result against Southampton, who had done so well against them in the two Premier League fixtures this season. But they just dismantled them. The tiniest little hint of a mistake, Sterling scores, and they exploit it. And, you know, once you're chasing a game against them, admittedly they equalise, but once you feel as if they've built up a head of steam, then there's no containing them. They're unbelievable.
When you play against a team like Man City or Liverpool, it happened to Arsenal the other day, didn't it? You can play well for the majority of the game, but if you are not mistake-free, then you are highly unlikely to win the match. For me, this one swung on two mistakes from the centre-half, Stevens for that first goal, and then Salisu. He's going nowhere. He's just going down the line. Just stay on your feet. Make him turn back. It's not a dangerous situation. And for him to sort of stick a leg out with a half tackle there was a really bad decision. And it cost Southampton. And then obviously we got the showboating at the end. The cleanest hit you'll ever see from Foden. And I've got a lot of time for the Mahrez sort of giving the eyes strike to the goalkeeper. Giving the eyes, hitting in the near post. That was tremendous. So, flattering, I think, on City a little bit. But they're class told.
Given their issues with centre-backs, Saints, it was interesting that Jan Bednarek didn't play, and Ralf Hasenhüttl saying that it's because he felt that his mind was on next week's game for Poland in the World Cup qualifying playoff final. They'll be facing either Sweden or the Czech Republic, and that Bednarek didn't seem concentrated, and he felt there was a risk he might not really be committed in the game for fear of injury.
It's obviously maybe an accidentally or even deliberately revealing thing to say. I think these things probably make more of a difference at non-financially elite clubs. You know, next week Senegal are playing Egypt in a World Cup playoff, and lo and behold, neither Mane or Salah are even in the Liverpool squad. And we kind of almost don't notice because they pick a front three that has Jota and Firmino, and they bring on Minamino and Luis Diaz. So I'm surprised Hasenhüttl said it, I have to say. It feels like one of those things. I mean, Adrian will know more than me, but it strikes as one of those things that stays in the dressing room, even if you do think it. Particularly as Bednarek is now going to have 2 weeks away to think about what his manager said before he comes back to training.
Absolutely. I think that is a bit embarrassing, isn't it? And it doesn't... Basically, it sends out the message that the manager thinks I'm more committed to the national team than I am to Southampton. It's, not great. They might have to have a conversation behind the scenes there. And maybe Ralph will sort of soften his stance a little bit. But it doesn't reflect brilliantly on the player, because obviously, Southampton pay his wages, etc. And this is the world's greatest cup competition after all. So, he should be up for it.
Apart from the Intertoto, of course, which reached the quarterfinal stage as well. And what a key match we have in that later on, listener. Just also on this game, interesting kind of sartorial vibe going on with the two managers. Ralph, who'd come from a wedding, whereas Pep had come from his bedroom, I think, after being told to clean it by his mother in his kind of full black, dark Pep emo wear. Looking a little bit, actually, and you'll excuse me for this, but like Billy Corgan out of the Smashing Pumpkins, I thought, as he slouched in his chair in the dugout. But anyway, this isn't taking us anywhere. Let's move on to more FA Cup stuff after this.
So what do you think about this Jesse Marsh, then?
I quite like him. He's American, and American managers never get relegated, do they?
That's because there's no relegation in Major League Soccer.
Oh. It would be generous to say Leeds definitely won't get relegated, but if you want generous, try Paddy Power's Bet Builder offer and get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold Bet Builder lets you down. Paddy Power.
Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min odds 1-5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Here's Elise. Oh, he's hit a post. Zaha! A crazy goal. Zaha, who'd had a better opportunity a moment ago, was presented with a chance to put this tie beyond Everton, and that's what he's done. And Crystal Palace are heading to Wembley.
So has Parks, Sunday lunchtime, Crystal Palace 4, Everton 0. Dom, you were there.
It was great. It was great after the first 10 minutes. It's been great watching Palace this season. They've gone from being quite a dour. We were actually going back to the Forest chat, aren't we? Really, from the Chris Hughton to Steve Cooper tenure change. I mean, it's the squad they had last season would not have been able to play this kind of football. The squad they have this season is crammed with exciting, young, talented players who are really, really comfortable on the ball. They want to accept it in really tight spaces, and they trust their own abilities and skill sets, and they're a joy to watch. I mean, that was the first time we'd had Michael Olise, Conor Gallagher, Eber Echieze and Wilfried Zaha starting a game together. And after the first 10 minutes, when there was a bit of adjustment, they just clicked. But I take as much delight watching Tariq Mitchell and his progress, and I fully expect him to be in the England squad this week as people start dropping out of Gareth Southgate's plans. And Mark Gay, who is already there, and he scored the opening goal, and he's young. He's 20, 21 years old, and he's a leader of men already. He's an absolute inspiration in that defence. And it was an outstanding afternoon, but it's thrown up, given that they've now drawn Chelsea, it's got various different scenarios, obviously, that we need to discuss about that game, and not least Conor Gallagher's availability, which looks as if it's not going to happen because he's on loan from Palace, which is, you know, on loan from Chelsea. I wish he was on loan from Palace. On loan from Chelsea, and I really, maybe there is a slight possibility there was a clause written into that deal, but I really don't think so. Not after Chelsea and the Thibaut Courtois experience in the Champions League a few years back. But the other sort of sidetrack to that semi-final, which maybe hasn't got quite as much publicity at the moment because no one will talk on the record about it, is that two of Palace's co-owners, Josh Harris and David Blitzer, are currently trying to buy Chelsea, which is a slightly weird scenario, and we don't actually know who they'll be in charge of at that game at Wembley Stadium. And yeah, that there will be implications for Palace as well if they do divest their shareholdings at the club after what's almost coming up, it's over 6 years on the board at Palace.
There's a bewildering array of candidates. It's very much a hot topic at the moment, Chelsea's ownership after the deadline for bids for the club, which passed on last Friday evening. Bewildering array of candidates. Matt Slater in a certain football journalism website has done a brilliant breakdown of the various parties, the kind of runners and riders. You've got Woody Johnson of Johnson & Johnson, a former US ambassador to the UK's in there. You've got the True Blue Consortium, fronted by John Terry, captain, leader, legend, looking to add owner to that little tagline, looking to raise part of the money through the sale of crypto-based fans' tokens. The Ricketts of the Chicago Cubs, Todd Burley, is it, of the LA Dodgers, and as you mentioned, Blitzer and Harris, Palace's co-owners. Crikey.
Well, it's got to the situation now where the Rain Group, who are the merchant bank dealing with the sale, are basically considering the offers that they got. And there will be more than those that you've just listed. And some of those you've listed, in fairness, are not really serious bids, I don't think. And for example, the John Terry one is, I think he needs to piggyback on someone else's money, because 250 million, even if they got that, isn't going to get anywhere close. Nick Candy's another one, and he's got backing apparently from South Korea, largely. But these are consortia. A lot of them are taking money from various different sources around the world because it's such a massive amount of money that's required to purchase the reigning European and world champions. But Rain Group will look at them this week. I imagine that by the end of the week, we'll probably be in a situation where they're really only scrutinising three, maybe four bids. And then you'd imagine that they'd give preferred status to one of those next week. And that is the bid that they would then go to the government and say, please, can we get our special licence to progress this bid and complete the sale of the club. But to be honest, at the moment where we're at, everybody is promising the world.
Mm.
All these groups are saying they'll do this, they'll do that. They've got fans here, they've got fans there. I think a degree of cynicism about all of it is probably quite useful. Let's just see what comes out. Because, I mean, you know, Rain Group, they tell us they're not just going for the biggest amount of money that's being offered, but you know, their priority is to get this sale done.
Mm.
And surely the biggest amount of money might be the smoothest way of doing this.
Often the way it works in our system. All right. Well, more when we know more. Meantime, this game, as you mentioned, you're going to be taking on Chelsea next time around. You do have Patrick Vieira on your side, who is now unbeaten in his last 19 games in the FA Cup, 15 of them as a player, four now as a manager. And this growing sense of momentum for the Eagles.
I've been really impressed with Patrick, I've got to say. I think that injecting youth into the squad was obviously the chief driver of this change in style. But I think he's been really tactically smart as well. I think earlier on in the season, there were some outstanding performances where he outwitted the opposition manager, and he continues to shine in this department. And Dom was bang on about all the 11 players are now comfy on the ball anywhere on the pitch. They're relaxed. And I think that Vieira's got that calmness about him. You remember him as a player, so calm, wasn't he, to receive the ball anywhere. And I think he's passed that confidence on to the young guys. Dom mentioned about the sort of star quartet of youngsters the first time this started. I looked into how long Eze, Olise and Zaha have spent on the pitch together this season for Crystal Palace, because what an exciting trio of dribblers, you know, ball masters, creative players they are. Those three have spent 23 minutes together during the season so far ahead of this game. So to go into it, unleash them, I think was a really exciting decision, and it paid off.
That the sight of Eze playing football again is so nice. And I think they're fans of, I mean, he's a very, very likable person and footballer. He's a wonderful footballer to watch, the way he glides around that field. And he's been very, very frustrated that he hasn't been able to get in, because it's a long process recovering from Achilles injury. I mean, it's 10 months since he did the injury in training just at the end of last season. And you really, normally, you might expect them to be out for a year before they're anything approaching their back to their best. But I thought there were real signs on Sunday that he was getting there. I mean, okay, he had to come off with 20 minutes to go or something, but he played with a real intensity. Some of the pass that he slipped around the outside for Zaha in the build-up to the second goal was superb. And his own celebration when that goal went in, fist pumping on the edge of the box, I mean, that is just all that pent-up frustration coming out and just loving his football again, which is just brilliant to see, because, you know, really want good things for him.
It's also, it's really smart of Vieira, because if you look at the league table, I think Palace got 1.15 points a game last season, and they're on, I think, 1.17 points per game this season in the league. So, and he must have known that they were not suddenly going to turn into a top eight or even a top 10 team immediately. So by changing that style, you obviously buy yourself patience. And then the other way to buy yourself that kind of good faith and support is a cup run. So it shows the power of those cup runs. You look at teams like, let's say, like Wolves this season, and they started the season brilliantly. And now it's petering out a little bit because everyone's a bit tired and, you know, they're losing the odd game. And they don't have that cup run that then becomes the backbone of the season they can then pivot to. Exactly the same with West Ham. By staying in the Europa League, you give your season that kind of backbone and that spine that takes, you know, keeps fans on board. So fair play to Vieira for that, because it would have been very easy to, you know, to go out the cup in the fourth round or something. And yes, they've had a decent enough route to the semi-finals, but good on them for a Wembley day.
First trip to Wembley since what? Was it the Alan Pardew jig, Dom?
It was.
Yeah, that would have been the last one, yeah.
Yeah. Crikey. All right. Ooh, Everton, by the way, suffering, as we mentioned, the biggest FA Cup defeat since January 1955 in this game. But perhaps their concerns lie elsewhere in the Premier League, where Thursday, with just 10 men, they pulled off that massive victory against Newcastle in the Premier League. We'll talk maybe about the Premier League later, but it does leave them 3 points clear of the bottom three with two games in hand, one of which is against Palace, actually. The other is the Watford match, which should have been played this weekend if they weren't in the Cup. Crikey, anyway. All right, well, we mentioned the issues off-field for Chelsea. What about their performance on the field, just to finish off the FA Cup part of the show? A 2-0 away at Borough on Saturday afternoon. Quick Tuchel in the Cup's update. He has now won all 16 knockout ties as Chelsea boss. That doesn't include finals. When you add in his PSG time since the start of the 1920 season, so that's, what, almost three seasons now, 27 cup knockout ties that he's managed. How many has he won? 27. Yikes.
That was a really impressive performance at Middlesbrough. They absolutely controlled it. And I thought that would be a potentially quite a difficult occasion. I thought it would be a very volatile atmosphere given what had happened in the week. Not many Chelsea supporters present. A real feeling of everyone against Chelsea, but they just bossed it. They were superb. They real strength, and they, you know, they just looked class apart. And I mean, that's pretty ominous for any team that's coming up against them in the cup at any point.
they were calm, weren't they? Like Palace were in this game. They were just so calm because Borough wanted to press their heads off, didn't they? They really worked hard, and Chris Wilder's got a good thing going there at the Riverside, and they were bold, and I'd love to see that, by the way. Forest and Borough, neither side sat on the edge of their box hoping to keep the score down and nick a goal on the count, did they? They got in the faces of the opposition and tried to close the space, and I really admire both approaches from Wilder and from Cooper, but Chelsea were just too good. That it was as simple as that. They just calmly played their way through, and I thought Mason Mount was excellent in this game. He made the difference. One of the most intelligent young players I've seen in many, many seasons. He's the real deal, is Mason Mount.
Mm. He assisted the first goal. It was about his 15th attempt at getting Romelu Lukaku to actually put it away. And then it was Hakim Ziyech on his birthday who made it 2-0, and thus it stayed. In that category of clubs worrying about Chelsea, of course, now are Real Madrid following Friday's draw in Neon. That's who they'll be up against in the Champions League quarterfinals. Real Madrid, who got battered Sunday night. Battered 4-0 by Barcelona. Crikey.
Amazing. But,
yeah. I didn't see the game, actually, because I was busy doing Bologna-Atalanta, as you do. Yeah.
Which is amazing to me how, and we shouldn't be continually amazed because it happens semi-regularly, but how a supposedly star player in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang can leave a club and he can improve, the club he has left us can improve, and the club he joins can improve almost overnight. It's amazing how much that clearly that atmosphere and that the confidence and where the player's at and where the club are at with the player makes such a difference, because he looks absolutely reborn at Barcelona.
Mm. All right, 4-0. A pretty epochal victory, that, and one we'll be discussing in the Totally Football Show European edition, which will be out first thing Tuesday. That and the Rome Derby. Tammy double whammy Abraham with a brace there, the second of which was an absolute beauty. As for Lorenzo Pellegrini's free kick, I know there have been some free kicks scored this weekend, but I think it's the best I've seen all season, frankly. It's just extraordinary free kick in that Derby win. You also have PSG getting done. Further repercussions there, no doubt. Loads of other stuff to be discussed with Jules and Christophe and James Horncastle and Alvaro Romeo. Totally Football League Show is out today, Adrian, with you.
It is, yeah. It will include what I think might be the best free kick of the weekend from a guy called James Bree at Luton Town. We'll definitely be talking Luton Town, because that would be just a crazy story if they were to somehow nick into the Premier League.
Mm, brilliant stuff. Also to mention, Totally Football Show Live, which you can see at The Lowry in Manchester, 19th of April. TheLowry.com for tickets. Michael Cox, Duncan Alexander and Rory Smith on the bill. The Glee Club in Birmingham, that's where we're heading on the 10th of May. go to glee.co.uk to get your tickets. Michael Cox, Duncan Alexander and Julien Laurens are on the stage for that one. Excellent. Any other FA Cup thoughts, or should we just crack on to the Premier League? Listener, they had none.
Keep listening for Daniel Storey versus Flo Lloyd Hughes in the Intertotally Cup, sponsored by Paddy Power. And it's live-ish.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to The Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Premier League. Top three were busy elsewhere, of course, this weekend. So what happened in the race for fourth and the battle with the drop? Well, Thursday night, possibly Friday morning by that point, Everton had that late 1-0 win over Newcastle, earning themselves some vital breathing space. Friday, there was more late drama and more bad news for the bottom three as Leeds made an extraordinary comeback from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at Wolves. Crikey. Saturday, calm down, Arsenal. It's just a 1-0 win at Villa. And Sunday, Leicester beat Brentford 2-1. And Spurs were victorious 3-1 over West Ham. Where do you want to begin from those four games? Spurs, West Ham? I get the feeling, Adrian, you're nodding, but that wasn't what you were about to say.
Yes, let's start, shall we?
All right,
with Tottenham, West Ham.
Because it's back-to-back wins.
Yeah, they look better. It's starting to click. I do think this was a great time to face West Ham. If ever there was an example of a side that was knackered physically and mentally, I think it was the Hammers here. They just didn't have any legs really to cope with Spurs. I also think David Moyes got his selection slightly wrong. He went to a back three in this game, and bringing in Arthur Masuaku, I just don't rate him. I'm sorry, it's not a player that I think improves West Ham's side. And it just, they went away from what's worked, I think. Fornals in particular has been excellent, particularly on the break. And I thought this was always going to be a match about counter-attacks. Two of the best breakaway sides in the division. And he left Fornals, who's scored four goals from counter-attacks this season. That's the most of any Premier League player. Left him on the bench, which I thought was an odd call. It was a bit tame as well from West Ham. I noticed they had six tackles in the game. This is supposed to be a fierce London derby where you're sort of battling for top four, but it was all a little bit timid from their end. And yeah, Spurs looked so dangerous every time they broke away. It's kind of, I don't want to say all that they've got at the moment, but they look significantly more dangerous, Tottenham, when they're springing a counter-attack than they do at any other stage in a match. But yeah, they did it very well here. And yeah, Kane's hat-trick of assists was top draw, wasn't it? So yeah, well played, Spurs. They look a real threat, I think, to Arsenal. Probably the strongest threat at this stage.
I can see why David Moyes picked a strong side, because they were playing Tottenham in a London derby, and B, if there was a glimmer of a chance of a top four place, then they had to win this one. But I think he picked nine of the same outfielders that had played 120 minutes or started the game against Sevilla. And as Adrian says, they look tired. And I think that now has to be that for the Premier League for Moyes. I think he's now going to have to make a choice. And if you ask any West Ham supporter now, they can see that draw mapped against, you know, elite European clubs, but they've already beaten the competition specialists. So in any other season, you'd try and get top six or top seven and you'd keep picking your strongest team in the Premier League. I think he has to sacrifice that now. I think he really has to manage those players to the Europa.
They are facing Lyon in the last eight of the Europa League. Could get Barcelona in the semis, potentially even Rangers in the final. A lot of football to be played before that, of course. And meantime here, Spurs, usual suspects for the goals here. Kane with the assisting, Son, an own goal, putting the ball away. Tottenham's third top scorer own goal this season. This time around, coming courtesy of Kurt Zouma. And tweet of the weekend from Tom Williams, not like Kurt Zouma to embarrass himself by kicking things he shouldn't be kicking. Son, though, with his brace, very nice.
Very nice, yeah. No, he loves it at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, doesn't he? He's really lethal, and it's boring now, isn't it, talking about this combination, but it is tremendous. I really enjoyed the last goal, I've got to say, even though it was scored by Tottenham. Just a big hoof upfield, a flick on from Harry Kane, and Son gets in. For all the sophistication, for all the analysis, for all the sort of data-driven stuff that we're so obsessed with these days, it was just Route one at its finest, really. I was looking at Harry Kane and thinking, well, this playmaking ability is definitely going to extend his career. I think it's going to give him a lot more longevity because he's a brilliant passer. But is it affecting his finishing? Is he getting into those positions inside the box where he used to? And do Spurs have good enough creators to get him into those positions to score the tap-in, so to speak? And that's probably a question for another day. But I looked at the numbers, and of all the players to have scored 10 Premier League goals this season, and there are 10 of them, Kane has the worst conversion rate, which I think tells you that the quality of the chance, because I don't believe his finishing has gone. I just think that the quality of chances that he now receives are not at the same level as some of the other strikers around the league, because he's so busy making things happen for other people, which is kind of interesting.
Well, whatever. It does seem to be working for Spurs, who won four out of their last five now in the league. They're fifth. They're 1 point clear of Man United. They're three behind Arsenal, who have a game in hand on them, but who they'll also be hosting at some point before the end of the season, in what is also a game in hand. Let's move on to Arsenal then. Now, to be fair to the Gunners, which is very much what we do here on Totally, on Thursday we called this one potentially Arsenal's biggest game of the season, which sounds like a bit of a reach. However, given the toughness of their fixture list between now and the end of the campaign, and the fact they were coming off a defeat and it was vital to get things back on the right track, it was a big one and they got it right, didn't they, Adrian?
I did. Yeah, it was a pretty good performance. I thought it was pretty cool on the ball. They knocked it around nicely. The central midfield was excellent. I think Thomas Partey has been really good of late in this sort of new role where he's the only proper central midfielder. He seems to have relished it, and he was in full control of the match. You know, lovely switches of play. Saka absolutely twisted Ashley Young up, but I think most people might have predicted that might happen. Maybe that's got something to do with Ashley Young's bitter post-match comments about celebrations. I don't know. Classic deflection tactic, I think, from him. Arsenal were... What impressed me most about Arsenal in the game was their control. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they just went about it in a really calm way. And Villa had nothing. I thought Villa were really, really poor on the day.
You were talking about Chelsea controlling things at Borough. It felt very similar here. They restricted Villa to no shots at all for over an hour, and I think no shots on target until the last kick of the game. So pretty impressive stuff. Bukayo Saka with the only goal of the match, and Bernd Leno stepping in for Aaron Ramsdale with a clean sheet as well. All very nice.
it was nice to see Ramsdale there as well, because he often, when a player's injured, they embrace the prospect of a rare day off. But yeah, he
especially
wanted to travel.
Especially ahead of an international break.
Yeah, well, I think he's out. I think he's going to be missing for England, unfortunately, which is a blow, because I think he has been the best English keeper this season. I think that Gareth Southgate would surely have given him a look over the coming week. So yeah, it's a real blow for him. But yeah, he was there as a cheerleader, and Leno was good, even though he had, like you say, just one shot to deal with. I thought the crosses that came into the box, he was really decisive. His kicking was excellent. And this Arsenal squad is really slimmed down. There's not many of them, you know, and a couple of kids on the bench every week at the moment. But they are together, I've got to say, and that's probably why, you know, people are jumping on the bandwagon in terms of them celebrating, because I just think that they're really enjoying the progress that they're making. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
What exactly did they do in these celebrations that courted such opprobrium?
They didn't do anything beyond celebrating. And I mean, Ashley Young knows this. Gabby Abon-Lahore knows this. It isn't that they're celebrating the individual achievement. It's that they're celebrating this kind of maintenance of this mood that seems to be transcending supporters and players and manager and coaches, that suggests that they aren't, you know, mentally fragile, and they aren't allowing defeats to cause knock-on impacts in subsequent games. And I mean, it's a completely obvious thing to say, but as long as you aren't offending anyone else, you can celebrate however you want. Like, what's the issue?
Yeah, under the last couple of years under Arsene Wenger, the atmosphere with Arsenal fans was not good. It was divided. There was a Wenger in, Wenger out. It was quite poisonous when the team weren't doing very well. It wasn't a lot better under Unai Emery. At the start of Arteta's regime, obviously, it was okay, but then the no fans were allowed back in. So this is the first time in, I don't know, six years, where the fans are genuinely proud and excited of the team that they're supporting. And they're loving it. They're really, really enjoying the football. And they're enjoying the fact that so many young players are thriving in the team together at the same time, that they want to get behind the team. And as a footballer, if your fans are giving you that level of support and you're feeling that love, you give it back, don't you? You want to thank them for their support. You want to sharing it. You want to be part of that sort of one wider family. So yeah, they're doing absolutely nothing wrong here, and long may it continue. I think just celebrate harder and harder every single win between now and the end of the season, just to wind everybody else up. That would be my message if I was Mikel Arteta.
All right. That Spurs game among them, no doubt. That Spurs game should be fun. Probably going to happen three weekends before the end of the season. That's the kind of likely scenario with other fixtures. 3 points between them at the moment. So were that to be the case at that point, yikes. Who's your top four tip money on? It's Arsenal.
I think I've said pretty much all three of the teams over the last 6 weeks, so I'm pretty safe by choosing one of them. But I think my random generator is landing on Arsenal at the moment.
Is it? Yeah. Dom?
I think you'd go with the team that's in form consistently at the moment, and that seems to be Arsenal. I mean, Spurs have won a couple on the bounce, but they've done this sequence of win-loss for going back months. So the momentum seems to be behind Arsenal at the moment.
All right then. Well, meantime, the bottom three is looking a little bit clearer. Well, with Everton's win against Newcastle and Leeds' remarkable victory at Elland Road on the Friday evening. Let's talk about that. I mean, these are exciting times for Leeds supporters. Some might point to the red card for Raul Jimenez as the turning point in this game. But any time you come back from 2-0 down with half an hour left in the game, away at Wolves to win 3-2, that's something to be celebrated as well.
Yeah, it is. And I can't quite work out whether Jesse Marsh is happy to sort of embrace the Leeds chaos post-Bielsa or that existed when Bielsa was there. Whether that's kind of the last thing that will go, so we're just seeing the end of it, or whether he's just completely unable to control Leeds and Leeds are chaotic and this is how they'll be until the end of the season, for better or for worse. And they were absolutely dismal in that first 50, 55 minutes. I think if Jimenez doesn't get sent off, they potentially lose that 3 or 4 nil. But it feels a bit churlish to have a go at a side, as you say, that have come from 2-0 down to win 3-2. Mm. I can't think that Marsh is particularly happy with how they're playing. Obviously, he's happy with winning 2 games in a row, no doubt. And he's very happy with the spirit of the players. And that's one thing that is important, because I think some Leeds fans feared that the loss of Bielsa might cause a kind of, you know, a loss of sense amongst some of the players of you know, their dogmatic manager, but also their kind of mentor and teacher and father figure had gone. That doesn't seem to be the case. You know, you see Calvin Phillips screaming around, limping in the last minute to celebrate a winner. And you see that resolve to come back from, you know, to come back from the Norwich equaliser and the Wolves 2-0. They're clearly still up for it. There's no doubt about that. But it's so hard to work out whether they're good or bad under Marsh.
Also hard to work out whether that, say that Rodrigo goal was good, or indeed Crap 80s Football Twitter account is calling to ask for its goal back. I'm not sure.
It was amazing, wasn't it? I mean, the goalkeeper should have been conceded 2 penalties with potentially in the build-up, and this went complete walkabout come the end, and Rodrigo's bursting the shot, I think, off Connor Cody that went actually flew in off him. But it was Sice as well with the slice clearance. It was complete madcap nonsense, but it was absolutely entrancing to watch. Absolutely incredible game of football to watch, and the drama of it all. And I for one hope that Jesse Marsh embraces the chaos for the foreseeable, because it's still fantastic. I mean, it's really difficult for somebody to come in after X years of Bielsa, and he's got that particular style of football being played, and asking him to change that style into something that he wants, but also to pick players up off the floor. I mean, their results have been so awful, and the performance is so shapeless for such a long period of time that I think it's really a pre-season job transforming Leeds United. You need a whole summer just to work at it, and that was presumably the original plan, that Marsh would be coming in, you know, and being given a time to work and train the players in his own style. But yeah, to pick those two results up very, very timely, and it does give them a bit of breathing space, and you don't get breathing space in games with Leeds anymore, because it's just so much happening all the time.
You love to see it, don't you? It's pure fantastic entertainment, and I just thought that Wolves played their part in the entertainment with a classic batting collapse, didn't they? It was exactly that, wasn't it? They conceded one, and it was like, uh-oh. And then they just were afraid to just pass the ball or do anything with it. Everything. There was a complete panic, and Leeds had this unstoppable momentum. And it was, yeah, one of the most exciting matches I've watched in a long, long time. The catalyst should never have happened, in my opinion, the red card. Sometimes, James, a 50-50 collision happens. It doesn't have to be someone's fault. It doesn't have to be punishable. They both had a right to go for that ball, and it was fractions, real fractions. I know people say if you're out by a fraction, it can be a leg breaker. It can, yeah, but it doesn't mean that it's a red card. It was
a second yellow, wasn't it, for Jimenez?
It's a 50-50. Mm. Yeah, it's a second yellow, but it wasn't a foul. It was just a 50-50, in my opinion, where, you know, there's one player comes off worse than the other potentially. It's, if you take that away from the game, then players aren't going to chase. They're not going to chase 50-50. They're just going to let goalkeepers have it. Is that what we really want in football? So I thought that it was poor game understanding, actually, from the referee there. Yeah, I've said it before, but if we can fast track people who have not made it as footballers but have football knowledge and find a programme to get them careers as referees, I think this would be the way forward, because the standards are they're dreadful.
What, Daniel?
I was just wondering if Adrian's going to be
no chance.
The leader of the
and the vast majority of players would say no chance.
Well, is there any prospect of such a movement happening, Adrian?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there are. I think the PFA and the relevant parties are trying to, I don't know the intricate details of this, but I think they are looking at this just to find a pathway. Because for players that don't make it at 18, 19, 20, 21, that come out of football, they do look to sort of help players better than they did in my day and set them on their way into new careers. And I think that if there can be some kind of fast track system where they can be trained, do a degree, you know, in refereeing, so to speak, and get experience at a higher level rather than sort of Sunday league, then I think that that would help us in 10 years time. I think that the standard of refereeing would be better, because the huge missing ingredient for me is game understanding, and referees, despite their full-time nature, don't seem to be able to grasp it. They're so willing to give red cards, so willing to give penalties, and I just don't think it's always necessary.
I'm not sure that game understanding is the issue. Doesn't it require a different kind of brain, being a good footballer, to being a good referee, and your ability to analyse in real time the events involving 22 players running in different directions?
I think it's something that can be trained, but I think that the fast track element of it slightly worries me, in that if we agree that we've got referees at the moment who are struggling, the reality is that the process from step one to Premier League is around, well, it's at least 7 or 8 years of basically refereeing twice a week in matches and being assessed and having regular tests, you know, both fitness tests and tests of expertise. And if that's led to a stage where we already at the moment think that we're struggling, I honestly, I mean, I've written about it and shouted till I'm blue in the face, but I don't think there is an answer. I think we will have a chronic shortage at some point.
Meantime, wasn't VAR supposed to be the solution for referees not getting this kind of thing right? Anyway, I'd love to sit and discuss this.
VAR specialists, because, you know, this elite group are just sort of, they're all as bad as each other.
Adrian, you could be a VAR specialist. You don't even have to go on the pitch.
Do you know what? I really couldn't. I don't know if you guys went on it. I went on the sort of day visit at Stockley Park when it all started, and yeah, it under pressure, I think it is a different kettle of fish, to be honest. But someone's got to be good at it, surely. And I don't think this current lot are.
There you go.
Do you mean me, James, and Dom? Yeah, agreed.
Maybe.
Yeah. So Leicester beat Brentford 2-1 as well. Brentford not entirely safe yet, but still with a comfortable margin. Leicester putting together a decent end to the season for once. There was no Christian Eriksen for Brentford after their recent revival with the day, and he tested positive for COVID prior to this match. Ooh, Leicester, I mentioned West Ham's victory over Sevilla in extra time on Thursday night, although we probably didn't give that the love we should, because that was pretty extraordinary. But anyway, Leicester that same evening managing to get past Rennes, and that means that they're in the quarters of the Conference League, where they will be facing PSV Eindhoven.
That last eight of the Conference League is basically as good as the Europa League has felt in
who's in it,
seasons.
Daniel?
I don't...
You've got Olympique Marseille are in there, I think.
Marseille, PSV, Roma, Leicester. Now you're asking me to name them all. Bodo Glimt, yes. Feyenoord, and I'm missing one.
Slavia Prague play Feyenoord in the other tie. And if you're not tuning in for that one, surely Roma against Bodo Glimt is the game. Bodo Glimt, who had that extraordinary success away at Celtic. Prior to that, in the group stages, had faced Roma and beaten them 6-1 in the biggest defeat of Jose Mourinho's career. None of us want to be tuning in to see anything like that happen again, I'm sure. Anyway, just before we move on to perhaps the most significant quarterfinals of the week, does anybody want to throw lots of love to West Ham for one of the biggest victories in recent years for them against Sevilla? What a night at the London Stadium.
Yeah, and also, from the moment they scored the first goal, their ability to control the emotion, which was rampant at the London Stadium, like we've not seen before, well, since the 2012 Olympics, I thought that was remarkably mature, because those European nights, as a fan and as a journalist, feel different. And I'm sure they feel different as a player, and you can easily get kind of whipped up into a bit of a frenzy and lose your head, but I thought they were so good. To say they were playing a team that's their exact specialism is hanging on in European ties and making sure they get through, I thought was sensational. Absolutely fair play to them, yeah.
They played like European seasoned European campaigners, like a team that was used to year in, year out, being able to manage games at the very highest level and see them out. It was remarkable, actually. It bodes well for the remainder of the games. If they can, you know, summon up the energy, because they, as we've said already, they looked on their knees at the weekend.
Mm. Leon, a decent draw, I think, in the last eight. But you can get Julien Laurent's thoughts on that on Tuesday in the Totally Football Show European edition. Next up, something big. It's the Intertotally quarterfinals, round one.
The Race F1 podcast is now part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Formula One is becoming more popular than ever and attracting new audiences after last year's thrilling world championship fight between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. And this year brings all new cars designed to completely different regulations, conceived to make things even more exciting, creating closer racing and giving more teams and drivers the chance to be at the front. We'll be there every step of the way on the Race F1 podcast for this new era of Formula One, with podcasts released both on the night of the race and covering all the big news stories and talking points in between. Listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from, or ad-free on The Athletic.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is excellent news for Everton fans when they make their Lampardian transition from serious to funny to serious once again. Pre-match bet builders only, get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs, maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds, online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
Producer Charlie's written in to mention that PAOK Salonika are also in the Conference League last eight. So there you go. Now, Intertotally Cup quarterfinal number one. We've got eight contenders left in this competition this year. Amongst them, Dominic Fifield and Daniel Story here. Also, Charlie Eccleshare, Benji Lagnado, Julien Laurens, Lindsay Hooper, Duncan Alexander and Flo Lloyd-Hughes. With the quarterfinals, the going gets tougher. With tense music... And an extra sixth question instead of just five. So it's one harder. Let's meet our first quarter finalists.
Up first, he overcame his self-doubt to knock out his nemesis, but how far can the Prince of Perturbation progress? Give it up for Daniel Story.
Daniel!
Hello, James. I've switched from podcaster mode into quizzer mode.
Crikey. Well, let's hope you have. A finalist, of course, in 2020. But now, listener, known to everyone as the man who put out Michael Cox. Also, the only contestant to score 5 out of 5 in round one this season. You are the man to beat, Daniel.
No, I think those questions were generally considered to be slightly easier than everyone else's on the basis that I got twos and threes on everyone else's. So we will see.
We will see. All right, well, let's meet your opponent, the person bidding to be the person who put out the person who put out Michael Cox.
And his opponent. She lived out the Totally version of Rocky IV by slaying the Ivan Drago of quizzing in the previous round. Focusing her fury about the London rental market into football know-how, it's Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
Yeah, Flo Lloyd-Hughes, welcome to the Intertotally again.
Thank you very much. It's actually a bit embarrassing how complaining about landlords has now become my brand, because I've had so many people ask me about it out and about, and it's quite embarrassing. It's quite embarrassing when Joby McEnough asks you how your flat hunt's going. I think maybe that's when you realise things have hit rock bottom.
That was my next question. How's your flat hunt going, Flo?
I'm meant to be getting the keys on Saturday to a new place, so as long as I haven't been scammed, we hope.
You could be moving into a semi this week, hey? New semi-final. Anyway, if you can get past Daniel, you got 100% record in the competition so far. Played 1-1-1 after defeating Sasha. As you probably know, the winner of today's contest will pick up £10, which Paddy Power will place on the bed of your choice, with the winnings going to the charity of your choice. Flo, what would your charity be?
I'm actually going to go for a different charity this time. I'm going to go for Refuge for this one.
Okay. And your bet will be?
And my bet is on Turkey to beat Portugal in their World Cup playoff. I think they're 8-1 on some of the odds I checked. Really? So it's not looking very likely, but thought I'd spice things up anyway.
Okay. Daniel, what's your charity and bet?
It's the Trussell Trust, which is a food bank charity. And my bet is Wales to beat Austria in extra time in their World Cup playoff.
All right. OK. We'll be doing a big thing on the World Cup playoffs, by the way, listener, on a special early show, which we're recording on Wednesday. Not sure when it will reach you. Late Wednesday, perhaps. All right. That's then. But right now, it's all about the questions. Flo, 6 this time as opposed to 5, because it's the quarterfinals. Daniel's up first, and your questions start thusly, Daniel. Question 1. You're going to hear now a famous piece of football commentary played backwards. Can you identify the footballing moment it accompanied?
Oh, come on, man. That's so easy.
Yeah, thankfully it turns out, whoa, is the same forwards and backwards. So
is it, though?
I quite literally will never hear anything like that again, but I think it's Aguero's Martin Tyler.
You think correctly. 6 straight answers in a row in this year's competition for Daniel Story. Here comes question 2. This one's about world record transfers. I'm going to give you the year, the fee, and the 2 clubs involved. You must name the player who once set the world transfer record. The year is 2000. The clubs are Parma to Lazio, and the fee, £35.5 million. Year 2000, Parma to Lazio, £35.5 million.
Is that Crespo?
It is Crespo. Yeah. Boom. Question 3. Tony Pulis, Sam Allardyce, Roy Hodgson, Alan Pardew have all managed which current Premier League club?
West Brom.
Ooh, oh, Daniel. So, oh, Daniel. Premier, Daniel.
Did you say Premier League? Oh, no.
Oh, Daniel. Oh, my word.
I should have asked you to read them again.
Oh.
It's Crystal Palace, of course.
Palace, yes, obviously.
Crystal Palace.
Have they all managed West Brom, by the way, or not?
Well, that's a question for another day.
Yeah, they have, yeah. Shame.
Question 4. At which Italian club is Ethan Ampadu on loan from Chelsea?
Venezia?
Is correct. Question 5. Which championship club currently plays at the Select Car Leasing Stadium?
I was there on Saturday.
Oh, no. Don't give me clues, Flo. That would have been amazing if I'd have read your tweet that you were there. Select Car Leasing. I have to know this. I hate the new ones. I'm just trying to... You say Saturday, James?
Sorry, I didn't say Saturday, no.
I said Saturday.
Don't cheat.
Don't go looking through my Twitter.
No. I'm just thinking which championship clubs were playing at home on Saturday.
Right, on Saturday.
So I know that...
I'm just giving you that one.
I know that Hull lost at home, so I'm going to say Hull.
Well, I'm afraid it's
That's
not
another
Hull.
Silly name.
Flo, do you want to answer it?
It'll be London, won't it? I'm an idiot.
The stadium formerly known as the Majeski is now the Catchy Select Car Leasing Stadium.
Nice. It's caught on already. Excellent. All right, so with 3 out of 5 so far, here's your question 6, Daniel. Which Danish player scored an own goal in the Euro 2020 semi-final against England? Who scored that own goal? Denmark against England, 2020 semi-final.
I don't know why I'm thinking... the player that came to mind was Hjulmand, but I don't even know if that's a player. I'll guess that. I don't know.
It was Simon Kjær.
Oh, God.
Apparently, 3 out of 6 for Daniel's Story. How do you feel, Daniel?
That's bad, not getting that one. the Palace West Brom thing one. Has yeah. completely just destroyed me.
Mm.
But right. it turns well, out if you say Premier League, you mean Premier League, don't you?
I mean.
yeah.
yeah. All right then.
There's no Horncastle here, is what I'm saying. That's right. my fault.
Three out of six. Flo Lloyd Hughes, are you ready?
Ugh, I guess so.
All right. Flo, question one. You're going to hear a famous piece of football commentary played backwards. Can you identify the footballing moment it accompanied? Do you want to hear it again, Flo?
Yeah, go on. I don't know, sorry.
Was it 1966 World Cup?
No, it wasn't. That was going to be my guess, but I didn't.
Was it Jeff Hurst?
Yes,
I guess
it was.
It was. They Think It's All Over. Yeah.
Was that it? I was thinking They Think It's All Over, but then I thought, I listened to it again and I thought the sentence is too long. It doesn't sound like
right.
the sentence is long enough.
Right.
It was backwards, to be fair.
Also, he re-recorded it for World in Motion, which is where a lot of people know it from. Somebody just basically just said, oh, Ken, can you just say this? And he did it, and they stuck it on a record. No royalties. Shocking.
Because I was listening out for They Think It's All Over, and then yes. I thought, well, there's too many words here in this backwards phrase, so it can't be that.
Right. Well, it's not all over for you, Flo, because that's only question one. Question two, world record transfers. I'm going to give you the year, the fee, and two clubs involved. Can you name the player who once set the world transfer record in 1999 between Lazio and Inter, from Lazio to Inter, for £32 million? 1999, Lazio to Inter, £32 million.
What year, sorry, 1999?
1999.
Sorry.
Okay, the answer was Christian Vieri.
Oh.
Question three. At which Turkish club is Michy Batshuayi on loan from Chelsea?
Beşiktaş?
It is correct. Question four. Which Spanish player scored an own goal from inside his own half against Croatia at Euro 2020?
I can't remember that game.
Spanish player scoring an own goal from inside his own half at Euro 2020 against Croatia.
Isco?
No, it was Pedri.
Was it? No, it wasn't. God, I don't
Pedri.
Remember that game at all.
Is there any? Is the one where, like, it was Simon's own goal, really, wasn't it?
Oh, okay, yeah. Now that brings it back a little bit.
I'll bring it back to what you have to do now with these final two questions, Flo. Question five: for which MLS team has Napoli's Lorenzo Insigne recently signed?
Into Miami.
It's FC Toronto. FC Toronto. And question six. Which championship club currently plays at the John Smith Stadium?
Huddersfield.
He's correct. All right, Flo.
Oh, I'm so annoyed about that first one.
Yeah, I was going to say that first one's done you, hasn't it?
I should have just gone with that guess, but I just thought, no, it's got to be. I thought it was like an FA Cup or something like that, and I thought I'm never going to know which FA Cup it is, so.
Yeah. There you go. Flo, sorry to lose you. They're tough questions, but that's the intertotally at the quarterfinal stage, I guess. How do you feel?
Yeah, it's a dog-eat-dog world, isn't it?
All right. Currently wagging his tail. Daniel Storey, through you go, Daniel. You're in the semis.
Slightly between the legs rather than wagging, if I'm honest.
Bravo, Daniel, you're through to the semi-finals of the Intertotally Cup. And if you also want a piece of Dan's bet that Wales will beat Austria after extra time, it's priced at the very easy to say 20-23 at paddypower.com and on the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only, and please gamble responsibly.
Well, we'll have more quarterfinal fun coming up in Thursday's show, so look out for that. Many, many thanks for joining us today, albeit briefly, Flo. Looking forward to hearing you in the Totally Football League show later on this Monday.
Thanks very much, and good luck, Daniel, in the next round.
Thank you, Flo.
Very, very nice. And listen, that brings us to the end of our little journey with Totally today. So it's thanks to you for being with us, and to Dom and Adrian and Dan and producer Charlie. We'll be back on Thursday. Loads of good fun to be had with other podcasts in the meantime. So I hope you enjoyed those. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.